Joining me now on the phone is my good friend Hal Dardick, investigator, reporter, and colleague at the Chicago Tribune. Hal, thanks for getting up with me this morning.
Oh, it's always my pleasure, Rick. I'm glad to see, I'm kind of never done this before, I'm watching you on the internet. I'm glad to see you're flying the Cubs hat.
Yes, I'm flying the W, even though they haven't been able to lately. That's for sure. Well, I wanted to have you on for a couple of reasons. And one, maybe it was just the fact that I found this stunning, but was this the story that you did about a report from County Clerk David Orr about nearly a third of property taxes collected by City Hall are going into special taxing districts, into TIFs, the tax increment financing districts. That's a stunning amount of money.
Yeah, it really is. $660 million last year went into those districts. That is a little over 31% of the total property taxes that the city collected last year. And for the uninitiated, TIF districts are a separate set of funds. There's 143 of them covering one out of four property tax districts in the city. That money's set aside ostensibly to promote economic development and create jobs. The rap against TIFs for many quarters has been that it's been a slush fund for the mayors, first for Mayor Richard M. Daley, and then for the current mayor, Rahm Emanuel. And it's a mixed bag. It's a mixed bag, but people say, well, that money should be going into Chicago public schools and paying down pension debt and so forth. But the amount of money continues to rise, and it was interesting that David Orr in his annual report pointed this out, because I think it's been rising in terms of percentage and amount of money for the last few years since, you know, the recovery from the Great Recession. And I don't think people realize, I mean, it was, I think, 29% last year, just how much of the money that the city collects goes into these districts.
Yeah, I mean, ostensibly it's to capture the growth in property taxes and turn it around and use it for the economic development, the jobs, and continue that kind of growth process. But when TIF revenue grew by $200 million over the last 2 years, that's not an insignificant amount of money.
No, it would. In fact, if you put that money into the pension funds, it would be very helpful, because, as we all know, in a few years, the payments that are required to try and help those funds recover is going to skyrocket, and they're going to need infusions of cash like that. The interesting thing is, you know, and some folks will say, oh, well, you know, TIFs are a scam. I don't know that that's entirely true. You can point to uses of TIF that are questionable. There was $55 million pointed out in a piece by the Better Government Association in Cranes that was supposed to go and build a hotel near McCormick Place, but that money ended up going to not-so-blighted Navy Pier. And it doesn't pass, you could argue it doesn't pass the but-for test. So the idea is that without that TIF money, the development's not supposed to take place, the job growth isn't supposed to happen, and the taxes would never go up in the first place. But when you're talking about Navy Pier, that's a tough argument to make. And then on the other hand, there's TIF money that gets used in struggling neighborhoods. There was the $10.7 million for the Whole Foods in Inglewood and some related development near there. There was $10 million for the Method soap factory in Pullman. And Pullman's a tremendous success story. That factory helped rejuvenate the neighborhood. The crime rate has gone down significantly because there's jobs in the area. So there's, if you will, there's good TIFs and bad TIFs, and it's a real mixed bag. But you could argue that in these areas where the bulk of the money is coming in downtown and the surrounding area, that those TIFs maybe never passed the but-for test, that the development might have taken place in the first place, and the city could have increased taxes without an impact on the typical homeowner, because those places would have generated the extra taxes. So it's really, there's nothing like it in the suburbs or anywhere else. TIF districts are used actually across the country, but in the city, they're just so prolific and they're all over the city, and you got to question whether they've been used so that mayors can spend the money the way they please, rather than the way maybe the public would rather see it spent.
You also have to wonder, too, I mean, the time limit for these special TIF districts, whether that ought to be cut back. I know that, you know, it's what I think, 20 years, I think?
Up to 23 years.
Okay, and ostensibly that in part is, too, for bonding purposes, I would imagine.
It is, because that extra increment, as they call it, the money generated in these TIFs because of rising property values is usually used to issue bonds, because it doesn't all come in at once. The Whole Foods in England is an example. The TIF, without it, you wouldn't have the extra assessed value. So they issue some bonds, and then they pay them back over time. But sometimes that money is generated far earlier than the 23 years. And you're talking about expiration dates. There's one thing to note that was in David Orr's report. And there are four TIFs in and near downtown that are going to expire within the next 4 years. And those TIFs will generate about 100, at least last year, they generated more than $130 million. So what will happen is that money will then start going to all the other taxing districts. And I think, to be fair to this mayor, you also have to point out that he has spent more TIF revenue to go towards Chicago Public Schools, declared larger surpluses, said that he won't start allow any new projects to be introduced in these downtown TIFs, you know, which implies that he will let them expire. You can extend them,
right?
Believe it or not, after the 23 years. And so you know, he's taken some steps to try to curtail some of the big excesses. Yet that $55 million McCormick Place thing, you know, also happened under his watch. So,
yeah, and that still raises a lot of eyebrows as well as questions. We're speaking with my good friend Hal Dardick, colleague from the Chicago Tribune. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, here in the Allstate Skyline studio overlooking Wacker Drive and the river and the lake. And speaking to me on the phone is my Tribune colleague, Hal Dardick, investigative reporter at the newspaper. We've been talking about the tax increment financing issue and how much money has gone into that. But I want to talk more about just the whole broader issue of property taxes. And, you know, Hal, it's no secret that everybody hates taxes, but I think everybody really, really hates property taxes. And I've never heard, you know, in a campaign year the mantra of having to do something with property taxes as loud as it is. And the other day, Fritz Kagi, who is the Democratic candidate for Cook County Assessor, was in with the editorial board. You sat down with him. He's talked a lot about the system. You've written about the system and the inequities that you discovered in the system. Can it ever be fixed?
That's a small question. Yeah, so I think that there are certain things that can be fixed. As perhaps your listeners know, I helped Wright Tax Divide series. It was started out as a Tribune investigation, later became a collaboration with ProPublica Illinois. Fabulous reporter Jason Grotto kind of led the way on that. And what was found in the series was that the way properties were being assessed, and that's how they determine how much you pay in property taxes, was done in a manner under Joe Berrios that unfairly shifted the property tax burden from owners of more expensive property to owners of less expensive properties, basically shifting the burden from wealthy to poor in the city of Chicago and to some extent in the Cook County suburbs. So what you And that got a lot of attention. It was one of the primary reasons that Joe Berrios, the current assessor and former Cook County Democratic Party chairman, lost the Democratic primary to Fritz Kagi, along with some concerns about patronage and campaign contributions. But it got international attention. It was in The Economist, you know, magazine. It was really highlighted something that resonated with people. A lot of times you read about property taxes, people's eyes gloss over, but this sort of interested and concerned a lot of people. And what happened was Fritz Kagi, who is an asset manager, and came in and he won this race by promising to fix the system, to assess properties fairly at the right level. He came in and he didn't take any campaign contributions from the people that do appeals, and that's fraught with all kinds of political concerns, considering, you know, Mike Madigan, the House Speaker, and Ed Burke, the Dean of the City Council, are in that business. So he won the race, and he came in and he said, well, you know, I can fix the ethics and some of the transparency issues very quickly, he said the other day. He's not taking the campaign contributions. He's going to put on the internet a list of people who visit the office, a log of people who visit the office, so that everyone can see who's coming in to talk to them. He's going to something that Joe Berrios, we had to go to court to get some of the information on the property tax system for him, the Tribune did. And he's just going to put it all out there and let it down to the formula, how they calculated, what they think the characteristics of your home are. And he can do that, he says, within 3 months. But what he says he can't fix immediately, and I think he's tamping down expectations a little bit, is the fact that it'll take at least 3 years to fix the residential property tax system, because there a third of the county is assessed each year, and that it takes time to get the right formula in place to do that well, and that the commercial property tax system is fraught with problems because the data that they have in the office, as far as he knows, isn't very complete, not very accurate, and all that needs to be fixed. May require going to Springfield to change some laws, which could be a real political battle. So it's going to take him time to make sure people are paying the appropriate amount in taxes. And the other thing that he warned about is you have the south suburbs where there are extraordinarily high tax rates paid by communities that in many cases are populated by people of little means. And so the tax rate in the city of Chicago is around 7% of the assessed value, and what happens is in the places like Park Forest, it's 32-33%. So it's 4.5 times what it is in the city. And what that means is that people are paying for their houses many times over because the property taxes are so high by the time they pay off their mortgage. So he says he can't fix that because we're relying on the property tax as the primary funding mechanism for schools in the state of Illinois, which is something that the vast majority of states gave up on some time ago, because it is, by its nature, a regressive tax that dates back to 19th century agrarian society, when wealth was largely related and income was largely related to the property owner, which isn't necessarily true anymore. And so he says that, you know, he's a backer of Democrat gubernatorial nominee J.B. Pritzker's effort to do a graduated income tax, so you can tax people based on their income and then use that to lower the property tax burden, because you try and fund schools in a different way. And that's you know, that's all fraught with problems, too, because the state's so far in debt, you know, would they be able to lower the property tax? So it's immensely complicated to solve some of the problems related to the property tax system in the state of Illinois.
You mentioned about the issue about commercial property assessments, and Hal and I had talked earlier in the week, last week, about this kind of issue of kind of trying to base it on forecasted income in these commercial properties without necessarily knowing what actual income is in order to generate a proper assessment.
Right. They're trying to use things that are out there in the public domain to get their best idea of what certain properties would generate in income, and it's a complicated process, but the assessment for commercial properties is based on income and how long it takes you to return your investment in that property. And that's by state code, and that's how it's done basically across the nation. But what they do in New York, instead of sort of guessing at that and then let people come in and appeal and challenge it if it's not right or too high, is they require folks to fill out forms every year. This is my income. These are the characteristics of my property, and they have a much better idea of how long it takes them to recover. So it's much more scientific, because the data is what's actually happening on the ground. That is not the case in the state of Illinois, and Kagi wants to get Springfield to pass a law to require that. And there's a lot of people that are vested in the current property tax system. It'd be interesting to see if he can get support from fellow Democrats, particularly, you know, House Speaker Mike Madigan. And he defeated Madigan's guy in the primary, and he's challenging a property tax system that one could argue Mike Madigan has been financially vested in for decades. So, you know, I think we can look for maybe a political battle down the road on that issue.
And one, an inter-party one, not just your normal Democrats versus Republicans battle in Springfield.
Right. And I'd be curious to see, you know, that you could, I suppose, have Republicans that may join with this progressive Democrat on that one.
All things to stay tuned for. Hal Dardick, investigative reporter for the Chicago Tribune, my good friend, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
It's my pleasure as always. Thank you.